Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
My name is Ken Brotherston. I'm the Chief Executive of Talent Partners.
Ken, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. Before we dive in and talk about all the great things you guys are building with your current organization, give us a thumbnail version of your career prior to that.
So thumbnails are hard when you've been around for as long as I have, but very briefly, I was an accountant back in the 80s with CBS Records. I was a European financial analyst there. And then I decided to move into recruiting. I ended up on the board of a company called Robert Walters. And from there, I went back into corporate life as HR director for part of Fidelity, the US fund manager, and had a few years with them before moving back into recruiting with Korn Ferry, the world's largest executive search firm. And I spent a number of years there, ended up on their global operating committee. So one of the sort of half a dozen managers that ran the firm worldwide. And then in the 2000s, early 2000s, I decided to do a private equity gig, and I became chairman of a business called Morgan McKinley. And we sort of bought that and sold it 3 years later quite successfully. And for the sort of 10 years or so after that, I was a mix of investor, non-exec, sometimes chairman of a variety of different businesses, including a casting, a film casting business, where I actually have a walk-on part in the James Bond film Skyfall, would you believe? And it is the definition of blink and you miss it. I think I'm on screen with Javier Bardem for about 0.5 seconds, but that was one particular thing. And then 5 years ago, I was involved with a technology business that had a sort of sideline in events, and I really enjoyed that. So we came to an agreement, and I bought the events business and created Talent Partners. And we've been on a mission for the last 4 years or so to create a business intelligence company that delivers meaningful insight across the whole talent ecosystem.
Very diverse background, from accounting to recruiting to appearance in the James Bond movie to what you guys are currently building. I would have to make a note of that and probably check it out and see you in the cameo appearance. So definitely looking forward to that. Ken, tell us a little bit more about your current company, Talent Partners, and What is the problem that you guys are solving?
Very simply, we help employers find and keep the people they need. So that's our kind of primary purpose, if you like. So as I mentioned, we operate across the talent ecosystem. And what that means in straightforward language is we work with employers around the world, helping them identify and solve some of their talent challenges. And then we work with a group of vendors who are typically either large staffing firms, large talent solution providers, or a whole range of talent technology businesses to help them engage with employers and deliver their solutions in an effective way. And we do that in, I would say, three main ways: through our awards, so the Tiara brand for awards in the talent ecosystem has become the largest series of awards campaigns in the world, actually, servicing employers, staffing solutions, and technology firms. And that delivers amazing insight, because we see, you know, the very best that talent acquisition and recruiting has to offer. We deliver a whole range of peer-to-peer networking sessions in the form typically either of small conferences or workshops and lunches and dinners. And then we have a content platform where we curate a lot of content, and we deliver that to a wider audience.
Well, that's outstanding. Definitely, I personally see a lot of need for a service as such, especially on the insights and industry publications, on talent acquisition in particular, because it's been such a hot topic in the last couple of years as we entered and, you know, through the pandemic, the war for talent, the war on retention, it's been real out there. So further on that topic, what are the different trends in talent acquisition that you mostly excited about, especially these days and going into 2022?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, we say that the issue of talent acquisition has gone from being a kind of trade press, it's gone from the trade press to the business pages to the front pages, you know. And if you look at, you know, literally the headlines in the news as we hopefully come out of the pandemic soon, it's very much about how we work, you know, how we work in different ways, how organizations find access to talent. So it's always been an important issue, and it's never been more important. And it's a really interesting and exciting time to be, you know, to be part of that discussion. You know, for me, as we look forward, I think there are, you know, a couple of what I'd call kind of, you know, big trends, and these were kind of pre-pandemic trends. So one is around hiring for skills, not experience. And that's a huge shift in how organizations find people. And it's a huge shift in how suppliers to those organizations deliver talent. I think the notion of total talent management, so organizations looking at all of the resources that they have available in helping them meet their talent needs, is a really kind of complex and interesting issue. And I think underpinning all of that are the possibilities of technology and specifically AI. You know, we could get into a whole discussion about the definition of AI, but, you know, nevertheless, it's clear that there are some really exciting innovations driven by technology that are going to be making a big impact on the world of talent for years to come.
Right, absolutely. And that's such an interesting space that we could probably spend the rest of the podcast talking about
this. Just on that, yeah.
Yeah, on that particular area, because it's we've seen the different cycles in the industry going from, you know, just the initial war for talent and now on the retention side for organizations, especially those that operate on a global capacity to retain the top talent with all the competition that's increasing out there. It's definitely a challenge. So to double click on that, for perhaps any of your client companies or just maybe your partners that are succeeding in the space of retaining the top talent better than the other companies, what are the different strategies that you observe that they have implemented that really help them create and cultivate that environment of retention?
So, you know, I think it's a very important point, because you can't fix attraction until you've fixed attrition, right? So you know, if you're trying to bring people in the front door, but you've got more people leaving through the back door, you know, that's never going to be a successful, you know, strategy. So I think there's a few important, you know, points here. You know, the first is to be really clear about what you need, you know, and this definition of top talent is a phrase that's, you know, can be interpreted in lots of different ways. You know, you need to be clear as an organization when you need to hire the best people as opposed to people who are just good enough. And that doesn't mean you're hiring bad people, but, you know, to be, you know, I don't know, if you look at the shortages, the acute shortages recently, they've been in things like warehouse staff, delivery drivers, you know, where the shortage of those people have caused really acute issues in supply chains and organizations. So you don't need someone to be the best truck driver in the world. You just need them to be, you know, competent enough to do the job. You know, if you need someone to create, you know, new products and services and really drive innovation and do that at a leadership level, then, you know, you may well be looking for, you know, the very best talent that you can find. So I think it's important to be clear about when you really need top talent and when you really need talent that's good enough. The other thing I would say in terms of a retention strategy is to drive decision-making to the lowest level. You know, and to make sure that anyone you're bringing into your organization has that real sense of empowerment, you know, to be able to do the job that they need to do. And I think one of the things that a lot of organizations have found in the pandemic is, you know, getting 80% of the way there is good enough. you know, and in a lot of big corporates, they would have got to 80% really quickly and then spent a year trying to get to 99.5% or 2 years, you know, and then they never get there, you know. So whereas I think in the pandemic, because some things had to happen so quickly, organizations have realized that actually getting to 80%, you know, and then saying go is good enough. And I hope that's obviously, if you're designing a, you know, a nuclear power plant, 80% isn't good enough, but in a lot of other organizations, you know, just getting most of the way there enables you to actually get all the way there. And I think that would be a, you know, a good learning for organizations to have taken out of the pandemic.
Right, absolutely. And when we talk about organizational agility and flexibility to be able to scale up or down in certain situations, utilizing contingent workforce, freelance and gig opportunities, there are immense. What are some of the insights that you can share that you see organizations implement when it comes to utilizing the different types of workforce out there in order to compete in the modern environment?
Yeah, there are a few things that you clearly see working well with organizations that have thought about this carefully. A more holistic approach. I mentioned the total talent management, you know, approach. So a more holistic approach to your workforce and looking at contingent workers and permanent workers and increasingly treating them the same. So, for example, you know, giving training and development opportunities to your contingent workforce as well as your permanent workforce. A more flexible approach to how people work is absolutely, you know, crucial. You know, not every role can be remote. You know, some are in the middle and others can be remote, but being clear about how that works and communicating that fairly is important. A focus on development is incredibly important. I think people are much more focused about their career development now and the development of their own skills than they ever have been. And by the way, I don't just mean young people, I mean people in mid-careers and even people that you know, coming towards the end of their careers. They can still have 5 or 10 years left and they want to be able to stay you know, relevant and employable. Again, another area that we could do a whole podcast on is around diversity and inclusion. But I think, to answer your question, environments that are more inclusive are more successful. You know, so I think organizations learning how to do that. I think understanding that treating your workforce, often you might have five, you know, increasingly organizations have five generations in the workforce. And trying to segment them based on their age is wrong. And it's way too simplistic. It's just too simplistic. And it's a very common refrain that I hear saying, well, millennials do this and Gen Z do that and baby boomers. You know, in the context of workplaces, that is just way too simplistic. And if you're not you know, thinking about that more carefully, you'll end up, you know, tripping yourself up. And I think the final point is, you know, when it comes to compensation, it's really thinking about it as an overall reward package. So not just clearly pay is important and you know, all of those things are important, but actually thinking about compensation much more holistically and being able to flex as people move through different stages of their careers.
It's an interesting point you make, especially around compensation. And I've seen organizations get very creative when it comes to, you know, the benefits package and other opportunities to reward the workforce or the consultants or even the full-time employees that they employ at their organizations. But some stick to the basics, some stick to the principles. It works for different environments. There's no right or wrong. Just overall, to double click on that perspective from compensation standpoint, what are your thoughts on that? How can organizations really compete, especially when certain types of organizations do require workers to be on site, to be there in physical locations, while others have the luxury, you know, capacity to employ virtual workforce on a global scale? How do you compete in that? What are the thoughts, especially when we coming out of, you know, just at least getting flavors of coming out of pandemic, that some organizations really push for that, at least some flexible work environment?
Yeah, you know, and I can think of an example of there was a software firm in Silicon Valley that they, you know, they said, we pay our developers $150,000 a year. I don't care whether they're in the Bay Area or Vietnam. You know, that's what we're going to pay them. And there's a very pure economic argument around that. But if you're a larger organization, that argument just doesn't work. You know, that approach doesn't work. You know, you have to recognize that different jurisdictions, different countries have different, you know, different rates. So it's a really, really complicated issue. And anyone that thinks there's a one size fits all approach to this is just looking at it too simplistically. You know, likewise, people that, you know, work from home on a permanent basis, you know, they might be saving a lot of travel costs, but they're giving more time. You know, so how's the trade off there? If someone is coming into the office more, you know, they're engaging with, you know, perhaps younger people and helping them with their training. You know, should they be more rewarded for that? I mean, it's a really complicated kind of problem to solve. And it's not something that is going to be done in the next few months. This is going to take a few years, I think, to really play out into those models that, you know, a better understanding of those models that really work well. I think the key, and where we see it working well, is where organizations have honest conversations with their employees and recognize that there isn't a perfect solution for everyone. And it comes down again to this notion of trying to be fair, you know, trying to listen to your employees and saying, you know, we understand you've got a need, but we have a business need, we have an organizational need, and we're trying to find the best fit, you know. And I think organizations that have, you know, honest conversations about that are doing better in being able to either attract or, more importantly, retain the talent that they have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's just, there's so many variables to this as well, that there's no such thing as a specific formula that could really be applied to particular situations. So I definitely value some of your thoughts on a very complex topic and especially compensation for, you know, the gig contingent worker and the full-time employees. That's an interesting space. Ken, you do a lot of research, you do a lot of publications and writing on this particular space. But what are the different sources that you consume on a daily basis that help you stay educated, you know, or ahead of the curve, especially everything that goes on in your industry?
So you'd expect me to say that our own content, and in particular Talent International magazine, I encourage you all to have a read, is a great source of anyone looking for information on this. And actually, you know, I joke a little bit, but we do try and curate, you know, a lot of different voices and a lot of different opinions to help, you know, anyone involved in the talent ecosystem, you know, really understand the trends and challenges right now. I do look at kind of blogs and content from real market experts. And I'm particularly careful of people who present themselves as experts when they're just trying to sell you something. Okay, so I think I think it was a US president that said it, you know, be careful of accepting the opinion of someone whose salary depends on you accepting it, right? So, and there's an awful lot of content out there that is dressed up as insight, but actually it's a sales pitch. So it's important for people to kind of just bear that in mind. But having said that, there's some great stuff. But for me, the truly best source comes from the peer-to-peer interactions that we have. You know, the discussions with either HR and talent acquisition leaders sharing their challenges and their problems, and then, you know, talking to a lot of the vendors who are trying to solve those problems, and doing that in a, you know, kind of small groups in, you know, in a confidential way is just an absolutely amazing way of getting insight. And then the final thing is our awards entries. You know, as I said at the top of you know, this podcast, you know, we get literally hundreds and hundreds of award entries, and I read them all. You know, and I used to think it was a chore, but actually it's not. It's a privilege, because you truly see the best work that's going on, you know, in the sector. And you know, some amazing work that employers are doing, you know, on their own, some of the work that they're doing with partners, you know, across that whole spectrum of activities. And that's a fantastic way for us to, you know, keep up to date with what's going on.
Right, absolutely. And there's, with so much information overload out there, I'm always fascinated with different strategies, you know, how selective you are in terms of what you let your mind be exposed to. It's an ever changing struggle that we all deal with.
Yeah, for sure.
In terms of the career advice or series of advice that you had received early on in your career that you continuously refer back to and, you know, pay it forward for those whom you mentor yourself, what are some of the words of wisdom that you can share?
So I think there's two sides to this. So there's one as an employer, and when you're trying to attract talent. And I would say three things. Don't make it easy. Okay. When you're trying to attract top talent, don't make it easy. Make it clear what the process is, but not easy. Top talent wants to be challenged. You know, it truly wants to think that if it's, you know, if it's achieved a job, it's been hard to achieve. So that's, I think, a mistake a lot of organizations can fall into. But having said that, you need to make the process clear, and you need to be honest about the downsides of either your organization or the job itself, because they're going to come up at some point anyway. So you might as well get them, you know, get them dealt with up front. In terms of as a candidate, one of the questions, my favorite interview question is to ask a candidate when they make a statement, is to say, why is that important to you? And to keep digging, to ask that question three or four times to really get to the essence of why whatever it is they want, you know, and it might be money, it might be progression, it might be a leadership role, you know, and you say, well, why is that important to you? And keep asking until you get to the real essence of that. So as a candidate, you should know why what you're trying to do is important to you, and really ask yourself that question, because you may be surprised once you get into that and really think about it, what the answer is.
Right, absolutely. Those are definitely very, very powerful words of wisdom. So thank you for sharing that. Ken, in terms of, I see a very rich library on your background. As far as the book that you currently read, you're currently reading, or the, you know, your favorite book that you always recommend to others, share with us those.
So I've got two. So one that I'm reading at the moment, and it's a book by someone called Bobby Duffy, and it's called Generations. And, you know, for anyone involved in hiring different generations, I thoroughly recommend it, because it debunks a lot of the myths around what different generations want, and it helps to explain how we kind of intersect in lots and lots of different ways, people of different ages. So I would encourage anyone to read that, because I found it incredibly useful. My favorite business book was actually recommended to me by a private equity guy about 25 years ago, and it's How to Win Friends and Influence People, written by Dale Carnegie, I think in 1936. And the simple lesson there is, to get what you want, talk about what the other person wants, right? And it is such a simple but powerful lesson. And it still surprises me how few people actually, you know, bear that lesson in mind when they're trying to get something that they want from someone else. So that would be my favorite or most recommended business book.
Well, you definitely can't go wrong with those recommendations, Ken. I really appreciate you sharing that. And just like with all the guests on the podcast, what I love to do is a follow-up recording in about a year, where we actually revisit the conversation from sure. a year ago to now, and see if everything we've discussed still makes sense, still applies. So I'm definitely looking forward to doing that with you as well, Ken. Thank you so much for your time.
It'd be my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.